Okay, let's look together. We've covered basically Genesis chapters 12 through 26 in different ways. And I wanted to just one more time cover these, but from the perspective of how our sin affects others. And so we've looked at some of these things already in detail, like Abraham and Sarah not trusting in God's promise, but taking it into their own hands to try to have a child through Hagar. We've looked at the way that Lot was interested in living in Sodom because he looked with his eyes instead of, you know, using discernment through God's principles. But what I want to specifically talk about this time is how that sin of not following God in the way that God prescribes, how it has an effect on others around us. Because usually when we think of sin, I'm not really hurting anybody. Well, how do you know that? How do you know that your kids or your grandkids or your neighbors aren't going to be affected by your sin in ways that you don't see coming? Sin has a rippling effect. Like if you throw a rock in a pond and you see the ripples come out, and next thing you know, that ripple is affecting the shoreline, maybe on the other side of the pond. Sin has those types of effects. We can't foresee them. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6 says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight." And after I got saved, I found those verses and tried to take those to heart and say, you know what? Sin is not trusting in the Lord with all my heart, not leaning on his understanding, but taking things into my own understanding, not acknowledging him in all my ways. That's really what sin is. And so Scripture tells us, instead of sinning, trust God. So what happens when I don't? Well, let's look at Genesis 12. We're going to look at chapter 12 a little bit, chapter 20, 26. This I find very interesting. And so Genesis chapter 12, the beginning of chapter 12, verses 1 through 9, this is the call of Abraham. And we've talked about this before. God said, leave your family, leave your father and what you know. Take your wife and your possessions and go to a land that I will show you. And it says in verse 4, Abram left, just like the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. And so we set the stage. Abraham, godly man, going to follow the Lord wherever the Lord leads. And it's interesting to me that in the same chapter, so very early in Abraham's walk with the Lord, he doesn't trust God. As soon, it seems, as he gets into the land, we don't know. In verse 9, it says, then Abram set out and continued toward the Negev. Okay, so we don't know how long he's in the Negev. We know it's less than 10 years because, really, the next time we see Abraham, we don't know how many years it is. It may be months, maybe years. We don't know. But in verse 10, it says, now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was severe. Makes sense. As he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife, Sarai. Now, this is where things get a little screwy. And remember, Abram is Abraham, right? Later, God changes his name. Sarai is Sarah. God changes their name later. Verse 11, as he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife, Sarai, I know what a beautiful woman you are. How old is Sarai at this point? Anybody know? At least 65, because God spoke to Abraham when he was 75 years old, told him to leave, and we know that she was 10 years younger. And this seems to come before later events when God speaks to Abraham and definitely before he has Ishmael, and I believe he was 85 when he had Ishmael. So she is now between 65 and 75 years old, somewhere in that range. It's all we know. Okay? And so they're about to enter Egypt. He says to his wife, Sarai, I know what a beautiful woman you are. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but let you live. Evidently, to the Egyptians, it would have been a bigger sin to have relations with a married woman than to kill her husband and then have relations with her.
Wow.
Interesting, right? Say you are my sister, so that I will be treated well for your sake and my life will be spared because of you. Now, do we see anywhere here that he consulted God on this one?
No.
To him, this sounded like a good idea. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. He's not doing that here. When Abram came to Egypt, the Egyptians saw that she was a very beautiful woman. And when Pharaoh's officials saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh, and she was taken into his palace. He treated Abram well for her sake, and Abram acquired sheep and cattle, male and female donkeys, men servants and maid servants, and camels. Let me stop here. That never sunk in with me. But in consulting some commentaries, here's the reason, most likely, that he received all this stuff. Because as a family member of a woman who was going to be given to the king, the Pharaoh, the family member would basically be given a marriage gift. So that makes this even more heinous, doesn't it? Not only is he saying, look, pass yourself off at my sisters so that they don't kill me. Right, but now I'm going to get rich off it, too.
What? He whored her out. He was a pimp.
My gosh. Abram the pimp. Wow. Yeah, I mean, so you wonder, when is he going to step in here? Is his wife's honor not worth anything to him? I mean, it's not worth his life. Why doesn't he think, wait a minute, God said I was going to be the father of a great nation. If we just tell the truth, let God take care of us. No. He's doing this to protect himself, and he thinks to protect his wife too. Okay, if she has to be in Pharaoh's harem, at least she's alive. But then he starts making money off it. Okay, but the Lord steps in. In verse 17, but the Lord inflicted serious diseases on Pharaoh and on his household because of Abram's wife Sarai. So basically, the Lord is inflicting diseases on Pharaoh's household because of the sin of Abram and Sarai. I mean, she's complicit in this too. I know she's got to do what her husband says, but at the same time, I mean, at some point I think that a woman still would have spoken up and said, what? Are you crazy?
I don't know about that. Cause
maybe not.
If it's your husband that you love dearly and he's saying they're going to kill me.
But you know what? This is the same woman that later has sway over her husband and said, look, I can't have kids. Sleep with my maidservant.
That's
okay, so I think she had a little bit more say in things, maybe later. But so Pharaoh summoned Abram. What have you done to me? He said, why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister so that I took her to be my wife? Now then, here's your wife. Take her and go. And he's so upset about this, it says Pharaoh gave orders about Abram to his men, and they sent him on his way with his wife and everything he had. Okay, so far, who sinned? Abram, and you could argue whether it's Sarai too, but Abram and Sarai. Why did he sin here? To save his own life, to escape from famine. Okay, making a decision that in a worldly sense sounds very reasonable. We'll save our skin. We'll hide out while there's famine, and then we'll try to sneak away later.
Sarai was guilty of the same sin because she went along with it.
Right. And so how did this come about? Well, he didn't trust the Lord to protect him. He decided to use his own wisdom instead. He lied about his marriage to Sarai. He sacrificed his wife's honor for earthly gain and comfort. What were the effects of the sin? Pharaoh's household suffered, right? So Abram's sin is affecting Pharaoh's household. And then how did the Lord, this is one thing I want to think about too, how did the Lord protect him in spite of his sin? You know, the Lord protects us in spite of our stupidity and sin. I look back on my life and I see so many times that the Lord protected me from my own sinful heart, from the consequences. And in this case, the Lord protected Sarah's honor by afflicting Pharaoh's household until he realized something was up and caused him to send them away. All right, so go to Genesis 20. You would expect that this is the last time we see something stupid like this. No, he does the exact same thing again later. In Genesis chapter 20, it says, now Abraham, so this is after they have been given the promise and their name changed. Abram changed to Abraham when he's 99 years old, told that next year you will have a child. Sarah will be pregnant. Sarai changed to Sarah. So we're in that range. Okay, so this is a good 25 years later, maybe. Somewhere between 15 and 25 years later. And it says, now Abraham moved on from there into the region of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur. For a while he stayed in Gerar. And there Abraham said of his wife Sarah, she is my sister. Then Abimelech, by the way, the term Abimelech evidently was like Pharaoh, okay, or Caesar or something like that. You'll have plenty of different people that were called Abimelech. It's like plenty of different people were called Pharaoh. Okay? It just basically means king. Then Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent for Sarah and took her. So you know where Gerar is? This is one of the Philistines, would later be the Philistines. Okay? But God came to Abimelech in a dream one night and said to him, you are as good as dead because of the woman you have taken. She is a married woman. Now Abimelech had not gone near her, so he said, Lord, will you destroy an innocent nation? Did he not say to me, she is my sister? And didn't she also say, he is my brother? I've done this with a clear conscience and with clean hands. Then God said to him in the dream, yes, I know you did this with a clear conscience, and so I have kept you from sinning against me. This is why I did not let you touch her. Now return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you and will live, and you will live. But if you do not return her, you may be sure that you and all yours will die. Early the next morning, Abimelech summoned all his officials, and when he told them all that what had happened, they were very much afraid. Then Abimelech called Abraham in and said, what have you done to us? How have I wronged you that you have brought such great guilt upon me and my kingdom? You have done things to me that should not have been done. And Abimelech asked Abraham, what was your reason for doing this? Abraham replied, I said to myself, there is surely no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she really is my sister, the daughter of my father, though not of my mother, and she became my wife. Isn't that when we're not trusting in the Lord, isn't that exactly how our minds work? Well, it's really not a lie. I mean, she really is my sister. I'm just not going to tell them that she's my wife, too. Okay? And when God had made me wander from my father's household, I said to her, this is how you can show your love to me. Everywhere we go, say of me, he is my brother. So evidently they had cooked this thing up from the very early moments that they left Haran. Then Abimelech brought sheep and cattle, male and female slaves, and gave them to Abraham. And he returned Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, my land is before you. Live wherever you like. To Sarah he said, I am giving your brother 1,000 shekels of silver. Notice how he called her, how he called Abraham her brother. This is to cover the offense against you before all who are with you. You are completely vindicated. It's interesting to me that Abimelech is more concerned with Sarah's honor than her own husband. Then Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech, his wife, and his slave girls, so they could have children again. For the Lord had closed up every womb in Abimelech's household because of Abraham's wife Sarah. All right, so who sinned? Again, we're talking Abraham, right? And we know Sarah was complicit in this one. And then why did he do it? To save his own life again. We find this, isn't it something that we will do things because we feel threatened? We'll rationalize the worst behavior. Well, I had to do it. Bad things would have happened if I didn't. Well, no, you didn't have to do it. You could have trusted God and then left it up to him whether bad things happen or not. You know? He didn't trust the Lord to protect him, used his own wisdom again, lied about his marriage to Sarah, sacrificed his wife's honor again, and made out like a king again. I mean, he gets all this stuff because of it. So the effects of the sin Abimelech's household is afflicted with barrenness, and it doesn't really look like there's any other effect, except, I'll tell you, there was. Because we're going to get to Isaac in a minute and find out that this evidently affected the child Isaac, who wasn't even born yet, to think in the same way. How did the Lord protect in spite of the sin? Well, he kept Abimelech from violating Sarah's honor. We don't know if Pharaoh had any relations with Sarah, but we know that Abimelech did not. And God said, I kept you from doing that. I kept you. And the Lord did this by appearing to Abimelech in a dream. I love that. You're dead, man. You're dead. That woman you're with, she's married, and I'm about to kill you for it. Whoa, wait, Lord. Okay, so now go to chapter 26. And this is what I mean. Sometimes our sin can affect things in the future that we can't even think about. We don't even know how the effects are going to happen, but it can affect generations from now. Now, there was a famine in the land beside the earlier famine of Abraham's time. And Isaac is the son of the promise for Abraham, right? Sarah and Abraham's son. Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. The Lord appeared to Isaac and said, do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land where I tell you to live. Stay in this land for a while, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and your descendants I will give all these lands and will confirm the oath I swore to your father Abraham. I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars of the sky and will give them all these lands, and through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed. The same promise God gave to Abraham, he is now repeating to Abraham's son Isaac. Okay? Because Abraham obeyed me and kept my requirements, my commands, my decrees, and my laws. So Isaac stayed in Gerar. So you would expect Isaac to have just been told by God, listen, this is where I want you to be. You're right in the right place. I will take the promises I gave to your father, and they will be realized through you. You're good. Wouldn't you think that Isaac would then go, God is with me, and let me just be truthful in everything I do? Nope. When the men of that place asked him about his wife, he said, she's my sister. And he wasn't even telling any truth at all. Okay, that was true when it came to Abraham. It wasn't true with Isaac. Is it his cousin or second cousin? Cousin. Rebecca's his cousin, not his sister. You would have thought he said, she's my cousin, but no. Because he was afraid to say, she's my wife. He thought the men of this place might kill me on account of Rebecca because she is beautiful. When Isaac had been there a long time, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked down from a window and saw Isaac caressing his wife Rebecca. Evidently, Rebecca wasn't as beautiful as Sarah because Abimelech didn't grab her up right away.
Oh, wow.
But I guess maybe he had eyes for her and looks out and, wait a second. That must not be his sister because, brothers and sisters, this isn't Mississippi, you know. Joke. Kissing cousins? Sorry. So Abimelech summoned Isaac and said, she is really your wife. Why did you say she is my sister? Isaac answered him, because I thought I might lose my life on account of her. Then Abimelech said, what is this you have done to us? One of the men might have well slept with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us. Now, we don't know if this is the same Abimelech as before. We don't know. Could be. Doesn't have to be. So Abimelech gave orders to all the people. Anyone who molests this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. And then here's the crazy thing again. Isaac prospers. Isaac planted crops in that land. The same year reaped a hundredfold because the Lord blessed him. The man became rich, and his wealth continued to grow until he became very wealthy. He had so many flocks and herds and servants that the Philistines envied him. And here's the kicker. So all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the time of his father Abraham, the Philistines stopped up, filling them with earth. And then it goes on, and every well that Isaac digs the Philistines' servants dispute with him and say, no, that's our well. And so I would suggest to you that had Isaac done the right thing and just been truthful from the beginning, he knows God is with him, just be honest about everything with his dealings with these people, I believe that God would have not only given him wealth, but also given him peace in that land, and he wouldn't have had to go through. He winds up having to move, and then finally he makes peace with the Philistines, but there's a lengthy process there. Okay, so in this case, who sinned? Well, this time it's Isaac, his wife Rebekah. Again, same reason, to save his own life, to live in a good land in this time. What was going on? He didn't trust the Lord to protect him and used his own wisdom instead. He lied about his marriage to Rebekah, again, sacrificing his wife's honor for earthly gain and comfort. What were the effects? Hostility and quarreling with the people that he was living around. And how did the Lord protect in spite of the sin? The Lord blessed Isaac materially, and he also protected Isaac and led him into a safe land, finally. So, even there's a couple things that I come away with this. First of all, I need to trust in the Lord and stop depending on my own way of thinking. I love the Jeff Lovingood of Long Hollow Baptist Church used to talk about stinking thinking. And that phrase just sticks in my head. Stinking thinking. Cut the stinking thinking and just do it the way the Lord wants you to do. Second of all, even in my sin, the Lord is protecting. And I see that all around in my life. I look back on all the stupidity and outright sinful behavior I've had, and the Lord still has shielded me from the full effects and shielded those around me. Third, other people are going to be affected by my sin in ways that I might not even be able to imagine now. One of my favorite, you know, I love science fiction, and one of my favorite type of science fiction movies is when people go back into the past. You know, I love time travel stuff. And one of the things you always think is, how would somebody going back in the past affect what would happen then? Like, the timeline would be all messed up. And they call it this thing, the butterfly effect, that one tiny little change would be like affecting things far away with far-reaching consequences. And sin truly is like that. These little sin, it's no big deal, it's just a white lie. Man. It has effect generations later. You don't even realize it's coming. Now, very quickly, in summary, there's a couple other things I want you to think about. I want you to think about the fact that God told Abraham that he was going to make him into a great nation, and 10 years go by. We find in Genesis 16 that 10 years have gone by, and Sarah's just done with it. Okay, we've waited and waited and waited. I'm still barren. Look, I'm 75 years old now. Ain't no way that I'm having a kid. And she might have gone through menopause. Maybe that was the big deal. We don't know what got into her head to decide that. But now, take Hagar and fulfill God's promise through her. Okay, and Abraham thinks about it and for whatever reason says, yeah, okay, let's go ahead. Well, so in that case, who sinned? Sarah and Abraham. Why did they do it? Because they thought they were helping God fulfill his promise. Yes, at the beginning, I would say she probably didn't have much choice in the matter since she was a servant, but then she sinned definitely later in the way she mistreated her mistress. So, how were they sinning? Well, they didn't trust the Lord to fulfill his promise, and they had Abraham sleep with Hagar to have a child. The effects then were that they had Ishmael come from Hagar, and Ishmael and his descendants would be at war, hostility, with Isaac's descendants basically forever. Okay, so the Arab nations and the Jewish nation. Yeah, wild donkey of a man. Okay, how did the Lord protect in spite of the sin? He actually tells Hagar that he's going to take care of her and Ishmael. And then later, when Ishmael and Hagar have been sent away, it looks like they're going to die in the desert, God provides for them and helps Ishmael to grow up. All right? Then finally, we talked about Lot before. And I just want to mention this again. Remember, Abram and Lot grow so prosperous, they can't live in the same area. So Abraham says, Lot, you get first choice. Wherever you take, I'll take the opposite. And Lot looks around and looks at the valley around Sodom and says, man, that is the beautiful place. He doesn't use godly guidance. He uses worldly wisdom to make his decision. Choose that. And we find Lot first live in a tent near Sodom, and later he's living in Sodom. So he's not separating himself from that influence. He's actually getting involved in that influence. All right, so who sinned there? Lot. Why? Because he trusted in his eyes and his flesh, more in the Lord's provision. How? He picked land near Sodom, then moved to Sodom, even becoming a city leader. It says he was sitting at the gate. What were the effects? He gets taken into captivity. Remember, the four kings come and take him away. Abram has to come and save his butt. His wife and sons-in-law die, okay, because sons-in-law don't believe him when the angels tell him that judgment's coming upon Sodom. And his wife, her heart is so filled with Sodom, she can't help but turn back and gets turned into a pillar of salt. Then his daughters decide that they're never going to have another husband, get him drunk, and take turns sleeping with him to where they have children from their dad, an abomination. Okay. How did the Lord protect in spite of this sin? Well, first of all, he used Abram to go and rescue Lot. Then he sent angels to rescue Lot from the city and his family from the destruction sent upon Sodom and Gomorrah. And finally, how did the Lord protect, and what blessing did the Lord bring from the sin? Anybody know?
The two nations, Ammonites and...
Right? That would be one of the problems, the things we didn't see. Those children that the daughters had turned out to be nations at war with Israel forever. Okay. And what's the long-lasting blessing that God brought from this abominable, terrible sin that's a blessing to you and I? Well, in a way, but Jesus Christ. Ruth is a Moabitess. The book of Ruth, remember, this family in Israel goes down to Moab to live because there's a famine in the land again. Isn't this interesting, the way that these things come back and repeat? There's a famine in the land, and they go to Moab. And we get Ruth and her daughters-in-law now. Naomi, her daughter-in-law, comes back to Israel with her when the husbands of the two daughter-in-laws die and when Naomi's husband dies. Naomi tells Ruth to go work in a certain field of Boaz. Boaz marries Naomi. They have a child, and that child has a child, and that grandchild is King David's dad, Jesse. And so King David comes from Moab line. Jesus comes from David's line. Isn't it interesting the way the Lord will take sin and use it to bring blessing? So our sin affects others, but there's great hope because the Lord can take these sins and bring blessing even from them. And that's one of the most encouraging things that I know. Let's close in prayer. Lord, I pray that we truly would depend upon you and not our own understanding. In all of our ways, acknowledge you, Lord, and allow you to make our path straight. But Lord, when we fail, and when we sin, and Lord, there is no one on earth that does not sin. Lord, I pray that you would bring repentance and forgiveness and continue to shower your blessings. In Christ I pray this. Amen. Thank you. Sorry about that Mississippi crack. I would have said Tennessee or something. Louisiana. Arkansas. You've never heard that?